If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Hey, welcome to the Bill and Wendy Show. I'm Rick Hogan, filling in for a couple hours. We're going to have, as our many guests, one of them will be Barack Obama at 11:15, making a speech right here in the studio, in the Showcase studio. So the show will be a little in flux, but it's my great pleasure to have on now Ken Price. He has been for decades now, right, Ken? The Director of Public Relations at the Palmer House, but more recently is the official historian of the Palmer House. I wrote about you a few weeks ago.
You sure did.
Did you enjoy the story?
Thank you so much for doing that.
Did you enjoy the story? Did I get everything right?
You got it incredibly right. Thank you so much.
One of the things as we celebrate the holidays and you go down to the Loop to look at the field windows is life can be a lot more interesting if you understand the history of your place. Not the Palmer House specifically, but Chicago.
No question about it.
And this is a realization that you did not have as a child. This is a realization that came relatively recently.
Too many of us are presented with history in terms of chronology and a timeline, and that is a framework, but that really doesn't explain to you the personalities who make the timeline work. And that's one of the things that we've been trying to do. And I must say, we've been rather successful with our History's Hot program of not only talking about the founders of the Palmer House, but so many of the people that built Chicago, why they came here, you know, why they were afraid of fire, why they introduced the light bulb and all this other kind of stuff. And that's significant to understand the personalities and the blood and the guts. And again, not just the Palmer House, not just Chicago, but one of my things now is I want young people to understand more about their ancestry, and I don't think they're doing that.
Well, one of the things, Ken, as you well know, when you speak about people like Potter Palmer and Bertha Honoré Palmer, I hesitate to say that the people of the past are considerably more interesting than the people we have now. Talk about Potter Palmer and then a little about the remarkable, and, you know, Bertha Palmer has really kind of, sadly, everybody knows the name Potter Palmer, I think.
No question about
it. But Bertha has really kind of faded under history's
dust. Well, I think, but I think a larger, we're 50,000 miles up. I think, unfortunately today, pop culture has made us interested in kind of the underbelly of the personalities that are occurring today. Huh. And I don't necessarily know if that's healthy. And for some reason, we want to read more about, and I'm not going to mention names, someone who's come out of rehab for the seventh time, then we want to learn about someone like Bertha Palmer, who basically did some remarkable, incredible, brave things, an amendment to the Constitution, Women's Garment Workers Union, all kinds of things, introducing a form of painting that had never been seen before in America called Impressionism, and was the first to acquire six of Monet's paintings. My God,
and really one of the early and great feminists in this world.
We're losing that. We are losing learning about people who look at a situation. I don't know. I've never remembered if it was Socrates or if it was Plato, the one who said or wrote, necessity is the mother of invention. These people looked at a situation and said, well, we've got to figure something out. And because, I shouldn't be saying this,
yes,
the way young people are taught, they're taught to a test, to timeline. And that really doesn't teach you how to synthesize information, which is what I believe intelligence is.
Yeah.
So thank you for acknowledging all that.
That's Ken Price, the head of public relations at the Palmer House, which is a place, whether you want to stay there over the holidays or not, it is simply a place you must walk in. Ken does these tours Tuesdays through Saturday. You buy lunch at the Lockwood restaurant, and then Ken takes you into this.
Then they belong to me.
For about an hour and a half. There are a number of surprises on the tour. One of the best being the little treat you get after the entire tour is over. Who are the people who go on these tours, Ken?
Well, I'm finding many former academics, many professional people. We are now doing team building groups. A lot of the businesses in the area are putting together groups and saying this is a great activity for all of us because it is in fact interactive. Yeah. I don't stand in, or actually I sit with them, I learn from them. I learn so much information from them, and it's fun. And we talk about a lot of the stuff that is not usually talked about. And I'm not talking about stuff that is
dry and dull.
Well, not necessarily dry and dull.
It's
but
not.
It's not a tell-all kind of thing. That's so far beneath what we're doing. But we're finding a lot of young people and millennials are digging this and coming to it and really. I never knew this. I never knew that. And it's such
a joy.
But see,
this is your great advantage because the way people have been taught history, you're going to get a lot of, I never knew this. I didn't know this. The Palmer House is this old. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Ken Price, who is talking history specifically about the Palmer House. There's a big event next Saturday, which is one of the most bizarre but enjoyable events in Chicago. Feed your sports need. Watch Chicago's new nightly sports talk show, Sports Feed, Sunday through Thursday nights at 6, only on CLTV. This is Rick Hogan filling in for Bill and Wendy, talking to Ken Price. That's a really interesting commercial here because we do not generally see the city as we should see the city. The Palmer House, to my mind, is a living. I know it has rooms, I know you have banquets, and I know people stay there. To me, it's a living museum, Ken Price.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, not only in terms of artifacts, but in terms of some incredible art. The reflection of Bertha's love and introduction of Impressionism is forwarded to so much of the art in the hotel. When she knew that this incarnation, the third incarnation, was going to be built, she had stopped in St. Peter's in Rome and seen for the first time the Sistine Chapel. And for those of you who are listeners, and I know that you're familiar with this, that she liked that ceiling so much, but the ceiling is of the creation. She wanted one that spoke of love and romance, and that ceiling done by Louis Pierre Regal, those 21 paintings. I love to just stand at the top of the escalator and yep. watch guests arrive and their mouth drops. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. You're not going to see that anywhere, really.
I know. The whole
hotel. And of course, there's so much Tiffany throughout the hotel. She was believed to have introduced Lewis Comfort Tiffany from New York in the 1850s to do work in the second hotel and certainly her famous castle.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that there is so much Tiffany, not just in the Palmer House, but in the Macy's building and, of course, the Cultural Center. And there's so much Tiffany throughout the city. Another thing that you can hang on her crown.
Yeah. You're listening to the incredible enthusiasm, palpable enthusiasm of Ken Price from the Palmer House. We have to go to Steve Bertrand. Steve, what's up?
Rick, a story I know you've been following the entire city of police commander Glenn Evans today found not guilty in a brutality case. He had been charged in a situation going back to 2013 where prosecutors say he had forced his service revolver down the throat of a suspect. They found DNA on the service revolver from the suspect, but there were discrepancies in the story as well. And this morning, a Cook County judge has found Glenn Evans not guilty.
Thanks for that update. That's the way it seemed to me from just the reading of it. Ken, the Palmer House is the oldest continuing running hotel in the United States of
America.
That's
absolutely correct, and perhaps, possibly, North America. Primarily, you know, sometimes history is created, but not for the reasons one would think. It was never intended to have that record of being the longest continuously operating hotel in either the United States or North America. Potter Palmer II, when he was tearing down the second hotel, which in fact was the one that was the first fireproof building, actually, recognized that if he tore down that hotel, the eight-story hotel, to build the present one, he could literally, you know, be in some serious trouble in terms of revenue because it might take 2.5 Actually, it took 2.5 years to build the present hotel. So he came up with this concept of not tearing down the second hotel completely, but slicing it down the middle. moving people from one half of the old, which was torn down. And while he was tearing it down, he was building the west side of the present hotel, moving people to one half of the old and one half of the new. Now, he didn't know he was making history. It was Conrad Hilton in 1945 who purchased the Palmer House, who figured that out, by doing that.
One of the great things about the Palmer House is you see all of these new hotels popping up into town and see some old hotels reimagine themselves. The notion with all of them is to be hip, to be as au courant as you can be, which will indeed fade in a year. The Palmer House under Hilton and under you.
Well, I don't know about me.
Well, it celebrates. It celebrates the history. On every floor where people stay are these fantastic, fantastic portraits of people who had performed at the legendary Empire Room.
Absolutely. The greatest from Broadway, the greatest from Hollywood, the greatest from radio. However, with all due respect, I understand what you're saying. But, you know, and maybe I've had a little bit to do with this. We really want to introduce the millennials to this kind of thing. We don't want to turn them away. But we want to do it in a way that is relevant to them as opposed to still being something with a spinning wheel. We're not. We're absolutely not. We are not a museum. We are a living, breathing, lodging institution. And we definitely want to have them be a part of it, but in a way that they'll see as fun. But to try and to be extra hip and try and use the words awesome and boy, that's cool and whatever, you know, every 35 seconds, that really isn't us. I mean, but yet we definitely want to embrace them and get them into the Palmer House family. And I'm so honored to say that it's happening. It really is.
When did the tour start? When did you start giving the tour?
We started them in earnest about 7 years ago. And I never thought, because I'm a publicist, when Hilton said to me, we really want you to charge the history, you know, my orientation to history, like many people, was chronology. Law school, it was like a series of dates connected to an event. And I'm now figuring out that the reason that it's taught that way is because that's how you test.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's such an honor for all of us when we can introduce the humanity. One of the things that I've been quoted of saying, and I'm very honored, if you drop the H and the I off of the word history, what are you left with?
Story.
And stories are about people, and you cannot eliminate people from telling the story.
And one of the great things about starting these things, too, there was a lot of archival material in the Palmer House
that we
have stuffed into one of the most remarkable rooms. It's kind of the tiny museum on the mezzanine. But you have, over the years, over these 7 years, been getting all sorts of amazing things from
people. I think I sent you...
Yes, a menu.
From Christmas that no one's ever seen from 1879. And what's amazing, I showed it to our...
The menu is a full meal, 65 cents.
But a nickel was for
nickel
the tip.
Nickel tip. With some of the weirdest items. Not,
but you have to stop and think. You see, this is where you have to do some thinking. You didn't have the refrigerated car.
Correct.
Okay, so you couldn't have fresh fish or fresh salmon or whatever. So whatever you got here that was fish, it was either salted or pickled or smoked. But what they served was, I think you saw the bear.
Bear.
And boiled sheep's head.
Boiled sheep's head. The great thing about it, it's only 65 cents for the whole meal. That's a remarkable thing. And that's
what I never didn't tell you, a liter of wine was a quarter.
What a bargain. I would have been making money at dinner. And
people also probably would have been very
sick. You think
sick.
Of Chicago in 1879, 7 years after the 8 years after the fire, and this was as interesting and raucous a town as there was.
See, here's the thing that, again, I hate to keep being redundant, but it is so true. Where were all those other young dudes coming out of the East Coast?
Yep.
Chicago was a raucous town. It was a wild prairie town. They were all going west to where the gold was. They were going to Oklahoma, and they were going to Texas where the oil was, and certainly the land in between. At that time in Chicago, there was nothing except stagnated, polluted mud overrun with wild, pungent onions, which weren't even harvested. Yeah. So the place, I'm sorry to say this in the morning to your listeners, you know, stunk to high heaven.
It's 10:30. They can handle it.
Ken it actually Price. Created, the stench from the rotting onions created this gas 18 inches above the topography. And that's when the Indians called it Ooshikugu, Chicago, which means land of the smelling onion. And it's amazing how many Chicagoans don't know that.
You are amazing, Ken Price, in the Palmer House. We got to take a break, get some news, and we'll continue on with Ken. Are you scrambling for the perfect gift this year, something that your loved one will actually use? How about a gift of a great night's sleep? Get everyone on your list a MyPillow, and if you act now, MyPillow will provide you with four MyPillows for the price of one. That's a deal. Get two classic MyPillows and two go-anywhere pillows for the price of one. Buy now for Christmas, and MyPillow will extend their money-back guarantee through March 1st. Use promo code WGN. MyPillow is the official pillow of the National Sleep Foundation. It's guaranteed the most comfortable pillow out there. That's why they've sold more than 5 million on top of a 10-year warranty. MyPillow is so confident it will be the best present of the year. They're extending their money-back guarantee through March 1st. Log on to MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN for four MyPillows for the price of one. That's MyPillow.com or call 1-800-299-9579. That would be 1-800-299-9579. Use that promo code WGN. Well, welcome back to me, Rick Hogan, filling in for Bill and Wendy. Dana Montana will be on shortly from Sugar Shack and Dancing Horses fame, and then later Maureen Shulman, depending on how long our guest Barack Obama speaks at 11:15. Ken Price, you've been listening to. I've been getting a lot of great texts from you and a lot of great phone calls coming in. I'm not going to take them because I like to hear Ken talk. He does a History is Hot tour at the Palmer House, and you can go to palmerhouse.hilton.com and find the information for this. There's almost so much going on. This Saturday is something called Tuba Christmas.
It certainly is.
Yes, and it is almost indescribably fun. Would you try, Ken Price, to describe it?
Oh, golly. It is. All of us look forward to it every year. I mean, if you can imagine in one place, right now we're up to registered 386 tuba players.
Oh, my.
If you can imagine
386 tuba players.
Wait, if you can imagine 300 hippopotamuses in tutus dancing to Swan Lake, that's the analogy to Tuba Christmas. But yet, it's all taken seriously. Can you imagine 400 tubas playing Silent Night?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
I've seen it. So
it's seen it?
Yes. It's not hard for me to imagine.
It's incredible. And people come from what I call the rubber tire market. They drive from 300 miles to come and see this incredible. And the funny part of it is you look at it and you fall in love.
Yeah, I know.
Mean, we have.
You may think to yourself, oh, the sound of a tuba. It is unique. It takes place in other cities around the country, too, and around the world, frankly. But at the setting in the Palmer House, it's really crowded, cool. Ladies and gentlemen. It's free, and it's crowded, but get there early.
You got to get there early. And the thing is, this year, for those of your listeners who are interested in coming, we don't charge anybody, but we're asking if they would bring something for the Chicagoland Food Depository, whatever, just as long as it's non-perishable. We'll collect it and we'll distribute it, but it would be nice. But yes, the seats fill up very, very quickly.
And you can see, if you get there early enough, you can see the Palmer House in all its glory. I'm just saying that Ken's tour is a one-of-a-kind thing. It has been named the best tour by various organizations. If you've been listening to Ken Price talk, you sense his passion and enthusiasm for all things related to Chicago's history. He has some remarkable photos sort of candid shots from the 1893 Columbian Exposition here.
That have really never been seen before.
I know.
Tim Samuelson, who is the official historian for the city of Chicago, was kind of awestruck when I invited him to see them. Lisa Snyder from UCLA, who was here about a month ago, he asked me if she could see the photos. And, of course, everybody has to wear gloves to see them. And actually, you've seen them, too, I think.
Yes, I had to wear gloves
They're
to see
remarkable
them.
Photos that have never, ever been seen before. We also have, you know, moving fast forward to the 20th century, we have the incredible record, a journal of Muriel Abbott, of all the performers that performed in the Empire Room. I mean, hand-typed in meticulously of what they made, and it's amazing. I can't say some of this on the air because you wouldn't believe it.
You can talk about Liberace.
What these people made, Liberace.
Liberace, a kid from Milwaukee, right?
Outside of Milwaukee, correct.
A piano-playing kid from Milwaukee gets a gig at the Empire Room. And it's the house pianist, not a headliner.
Oh, absolutely not. He just played for the dinner show, you know, $900 for 4 weeks. amazing.
You can't buy a decent fur coat for $900, can you?
True.
There are many, many people for whom the Empire Room is a grand memory. It was a huge celebratory place. And there were enough shows there that a lot of kids wound up going there, kids who are now kind of gray-haired. And the memory is solid and firm. And sadly, we forget these things.
And, you know, we are entertaining. We had this incredibly successful event saluting Frank Sinatra on November 28th. And the only reason we chose November 28th, it was because it was the only day the Empire Room was not available. And everybody said, well, who is going to come on Thanksgiving weekend to a nightclub event? Well, we sold it out in less than 13 days. We are entertaining the idea of perhaps doing something like that, perhaps quarterly, because we are recognizing everything in marketing is about recognizing the need.
Sure.
You know, you can't create something that you don't see a need for.
Exactly.
Well, maybe something's happening. You know, maybe, you know, the Chicago Cabaret professionals, which are largely young people, have this great organization that performs the Great American Songbook and a lot of that stuff that came out of the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, that young people are now beginning to recognize. Look what I found.
Well, they're also beginning to appreciate it. I mean, I don't say that modern music is lacking when people like Taylor Swift and Adele can sell 80 million records, I call them. That's in my age. They sell 80 million songs in 5 minutes, but the American Songbook is the American Songbook.
And we can't lose it. And we can't. And see, the sad part of all of this is when I was growing up, I could listen to the big band pickup on this station through the Dumont network from the old Marine Dining Room, the Edgewater Beach Hotel.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yep.
From the College Inn of the Sherman Hotel.
From the Blackhawk.
And the Blackhawk. And the last 15-minute segment would be at the Empire Room. And do you know who that announcer was in 1939?
It wasn't me. I know that.
It was Jack Brickhouse.
Was it really?
Jack Brickhouse, who, God rest his soul, told me that personally. He says that's basically how he started out.
Wow.
This kid from Peoria, in broadcasting. But live from the Empire Room in Chicago, it's Guy Lombardo and
Ken
all these other stars.
It must give you a sense of faith in, not to be too heavy, faith in mankind, that you are finding all of these millennials and these younger people.
But the thing about it is, when the two of us were growing up, we could listen at night to WAIT, WJJD, this station, and hear Count Basie and Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and Mel Torme. We could hear all those stars. We could hear Sinatra. We could hear them all. And today, there's no place for these young people to hear it. What their choice is this rather violent kind of stuff, and that's, unfortunately, what's being force-fed to them.
Well, but the other thing is there's very little choice now. I mean, when you download a song, you download that song because you want that song. There's not that sense of surprise in flipping a dial and hearing, who's that? And plus, you could also go to Mr. Kelly's and see Sarah Vaughan.
Oh, you could.
You could go to the Chicago Theater and see
and that's
Frank
all gone.
Sinatra.
You're absolutely
Ken
right.
Price, you are one in a million. I'm going to ask you to stay while we bring Dana Montana on, but go to palmerhouse.hilton.com. Ken's thing is History is Hot, but he will also tell you that just seeing the hotel is a one-of-a-kind treat, whether it's at Christmas time when it's pretty dialed up, or, frankly, any time. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. This is Rick Hogan filling in for Bill and Wendy. I am in the studio with Ken Price, who you've just heard for 45 minutes, rhapsodize beautifully about the importance and meaning of history, especially as it relates to that Palmer House. We're joined by Mark Nasser, one of Chicago's great producers. He, the original producers of Johnny Boy's, of Tony and Tina's Wedding, and then Johnny Boy's Graduation. You've heard him on my shows 5,000 times. The only person who has been on my shows more than Mark Nasser is my guest, Dana Montana. Dana, how are you?
Hello. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Good, honey. What did you think of Mark? You met him yesterday.
Well, we went out to dinner, and we had a great night. We have lots of things in common, Mark and I, and we picked on you a lot. That was
I don't.
Dana. Picked on you.
Yeah, how Dana, he saved our lives.
Dana is, I'm going to have Mark, I'm going to keep you, Dana, if you can, all the way until President Obama comes on at 11:15. But the reason that Mark went up there, not just to meet you, but also to see one of what I think is one of the most extraordinary productions of any sort in the Midwest, The Dancing Horses. Mark, what'd you think?
Well, I got to tell you, the show was so professional. The costumes, the horses are so gorgeous. It's like nothing you've ever seen in Vegas or anywhere. And there it is in Lake Geneva. Blew me away. Blew me away.
It is. Ken Price is on, too, and Ken knows a bit about entertainment. Dana, what goes on? I know that the holidays are very meaningful to you. You don't dress the horses like Santa Claus, do you?
Not quite. Not quite. So everybody else is dressed. Our rule is that if you are in an act, you have to both be dressed, horse and rider. So they both match. They match each other. That's for darn sure.
I mean, you don't see costumes like that, like on Game of Thrones. I mean, it's unbelievable.
See, that I think is one of the great surprises, and I know Ken Price will appreciate this too. In the middle of Lake Geneva, which is not by no means any kind of hick town, it's an entertainment, the quality of which, as Mark just said, you can't find in Las Vegas. Dana, tell people how you are famous for generations of Chicago women for running and operating and inventing the Sugar Shack up there that's hosted,
always catered to women. I mean, from when we started with the male strippers at Sugar Shack and onward. And, you know, I was now able to elaborate in being able to produce and direct a show with what I love the most, which is horses. And always when I design a show, I cater to the heart. I have to select the music, and I have to select the things that I appealing would cater first to the women in the audience. And I always try to bring my audience to tears, you know, through whatever music. And I use a lot of the old music, you know, with...
Well, that's what we were talking about with Ken Price. That music gets to the heart a lot quicker than contemporary music. There's no question about that. But you also, this show is really, really appreciative. And you just have a sort of innate sense of showmanship for children. I mean, I have watched my daughter Fiona and all manner of kids, their eyes pop out of their head.
Yeah, well, you know, it's either, you can never go wrong if you cater to young and old. So I don't worry about the middle person. I worry about the
they can be taken care of at the Sugar Shack. That's right.
Yeah. I always worry about the little one and the seniors, you know, because they can't get to me with their walkers anymore. So I have to cater to them with another point, and that goes to the horses and the music and all.
Horses.
So funny, because I love using people like Frank Sinatra and Barbara Streisand and Celine in this show, and you know, the young generation doesn't relate to those people. They don't even know who they are. But the seniors definitely know who they are.
But I think, nevertheless, I mean, when you hear, Frank Sinatra sing, for goodness sake, I think it especially 100th anniversary of his birth, it transcends age. It has nothing to do with age. I mean, you know, Fiona, for instance, your little girlfriend, Fiona Cogan, is now kind of in love with Elvis, and which troubles me. She went from Johnny Cash to Elvis. Can you imagine that?
I can imagine it with Fiona, believe me.
Dan, Ken Price here from the Palmer House. I am absolutely loving hearing what you're doing, because we were just talking earlier about the young people not being aware of the kind of music you're talking about. But what you are supplying is exposure. And exposure is what counts for everything. If you don't know about something, how are you going to appreciate it? And I would personally like to acknowledge what you're doing and say thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, isn't that nice?
And I would say also that, you know, you have to take your kids to something and you have to sort of get through it. This is not the situation here. You take your kids to it. You're having as great a time. You can see the artistry. You can see the choreography, the acrobatics. It goes on and on. I mean, it should be the most popular show, you know, in the Chicago area.
I have said this
for
years.
Kids especially. I mean, take your kid and go. It's ridiculous.
Well, take your kid. You know, the thing to do is take your kid and your grandparents.
Exactly.
And your own parents. Take Absolutely. Their grandparents. Dana, how has business been? Has this weather been helping you a bit?
Isn't this weather something else?
Oh, it's crazy.
My girls that came from Florida to perform this year said, we brought our weather with you. And I go, oh, great, I better start hiring everybody from Florida for the rest of my life. You know what, Rick? The weather doesn't change, you know, the fact that if the people are out here and they're entertaining their family, or they come for, you know, a week of being at the Grand Geneva, the Christmas stuff that's there, and they come to me, it's the weather, they'll come. If they have to come with a sled, they'll get there to the show.
Yeah.
If they know about it. My biggest problem in all the years that we've been here, people still don't know we exist.
It's unbelievable to me that, because every single person, when you've been on the radio show before, I'd hear from it dozens and dozens of people saying, oh my God, that's the best thing. Look, Mark Nasser is a big time, you know, producer. He knows theater and entertainment, and he's raving about it in the same way that everybody I hear from raves about it. You're right, and in this day and age, to see something instead of sitting at home and watching, oh, look at all the cable we have at our hotel, to go out and see something live is a rare experience. Can you?
Well, Dana, the comment that I would have is, of course, you know that Chicago, for what we call the leisure pleasure market, primarily focuses on what we call the rubber tire market, 300 miles from the city. Are you marketing to those feeder markets where you could drive to, like St. Louis and upper Western Michigan and things of that kind?
You know, if I could even just draw the 80-mile radius from Chicago to Lake Geneva, and it's not that they're not here. I mean, Lake Geneva has been a hot spot for Chicago people for years and years and years. It's they're here, but even though they're maybe 5 miles away at a nearby hotel, they still don't understand that we're here.
Now, are you a member of the Convention Bureau here in Chicago, or what we call Q Chicago?
I'm a member, here, you know, of the convention bureaus and all. But it's very difficult because, you know, the big hotel chains like to keep their people in their hotels.
Yeah, sure, that's true.
The biggest problem is they haven't understand the concept like the Dells. The Dells, you know, they advertise all their businesses.
Exactly.
They don't try to keep anybody in one place. Mm-hmm. Lake Geneva hasn't grown mentally to understand that.
That's a good point. That's a really good
point. Oh, boy, I hope the city fathers didn't hear that.
I hope they did hear it. Dana, I'm going to keep you on the phone all the way till Obama speaks at 11:15, if that's okay, and we'll get more into what goes on at the Dancing Horses. You can go to the website. It's a cool website, thedancinghorses.com. And Mark Nasser, one of the creators of that smash hit, Tony and Tina's Wedding, I mean, that a phenomenon of entertainment, knows what he's talking about, as does Ken Price of the Palmer House. We'll be back in a few minutes. Dana, you hold on, okay?
Okay,
hon. Thanks. Welcome back. This is Rick Cogan filling in for Bill and Wendy, or doing his best to fill in. We're on the phone with my old friend and one of the great entertainment entrepreneurs I have ever known, Dana Montana of Lake Geneva, who runs not only the Sugar Shack, you can go to sugarshack.com if you're thinking of having a bachelorette party or one of those kind of things, but more importantly, she runs the Dancing Horses, which is, Dana, and thanks again for coming on. I know how busy you always are. And we have Mark Nasser, the producer, and Ken Price, the historian publicist for the Palmer House, on, too. There's so much else. The other thing Mark reminded me, and I've been up there a number of times, it's not just this extraordinary, beautiful horse show. There are other things to do at the Dancing Horses, aren't there?
Oh gosh, yeah. You know, we've got the bird show, and of course, you know, our bird became famous because he made it to America's Got Talent. And he also
Echo, right? Echo the bird.
Echo, yeah, and he also did the Volkswagen commercial a year ago. So Echo is our star bird, and he is absolutely amazing. People cannot believe that that little guy does what he does. And I made Mark go see that, too, you know, because I wanted him to get the full aspect. And then in the summer, we got the greatest petting zoo where you could actually hold and pet baby animals, you know. So we got other things going on. We're definitely not bush gardens, but we sure try to be, you know.
Well, the other stuff is fun, and it's especially fun, I think, for kids, because they don't, part of it being, Dana, that kids are really removed, especially city kids, from nature. I mean, what do they know of nature? I can't see a tree. Well, there's a Christmas tree over there, but we're removed from nature. And that, not to make some philosophical pronouncement about it, that is something else you're doing, too, on a very subtle level. You're making and allowing kids, just in the same way you're introducing them to Frank Sinatra, you're introducing them to nature, aren't you?
And here's where I like to throw in, again, one of my favorite axioms. What the fingers don't touch, the heart doesn't grasp. And that's exactly what it sounds like you're doing with this petting zoo. It sounds exactly that.
Well, even at the Dancing Horse Show, I mean, these wonderful performers in these amazing costumes and the horses, and the kids get to pet the horses. It's very interactive, very interactive.
So what's special? How many acts are in the show right now, Dana?
Oh, gosh, we go into, the show's an hour and a half long,
yeah.
You know, and it touches upon everything. I think the one that Mark was the most amazed with last night was the unicorn. You know, the unicorn segment when the horse comes out as a unicorn is quite spectacular, the costume on the girl. You know, I couldn't figure out if it was the horse in costume or if it was the girl herself that matched the
costume. No, remember I said there was a girl doing some acrobatics, and I said, I hate to say this, but I can't take my eyes off the horse. You know? I mean, it was beautifully, the costume on the horse, and it was a beautiful, huge, white, clean, beautiful horse.
Yeah, the animals are amazing. Danny, you've been in love with horses since you were a child.
Yeah, that's an addiction they can't send you away for. There's no cure for it.
Yes, horses anonymous. Horses anonymous. Yeah. So, do you run? You can't possibly have shows on Christmas Day, do you?
No, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, no. But before Christmas, after Christmas, and all the way up till January 11th, we continue the Christmas show.
See, I really think you people need to take advantage of this. I think you need to go to thedancinghorses.com. There are food packages available, too, but you don't have to take advantage of those. There's popcorn to have at the Dancing Horses, a great gift shop. But it's the show itself that I think will change. It'll certainly change your children's lives. Don't you both agree, Ken Price and Mark Nasser?
No question. I mean, I haven't seen it, and I hope to see it, but just the way Dana and the two of you are describing it, it's magical. And I think you hit it on the head. A lot of these city kids never get to see anything of this stuff. And the idea of, Dana, do you have baby deer?
I do. My baby deer are now grown because we get them in the spring as babies so the kids can pet them and hold them, and then they get used to people. But we have the deer where you actually go inside with the deer and feed them now that they're adults.
So what an experience for a child.
Dynamic.
They'll never, ever forget it. And again, all of life is exposure, and I say thank you for doing this.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you take your parents, the grandparents, and your kids there, you'll have 3 hours of their mouths wide open with nothing coming out. Yeah, it's amazing.
And an unbelievably reasonable price. I don't even know what it is, but I know it's reasonable. You can get all the information you want at thedancinghorses.com. And as Mark Nasser said, this really should be, Dana, the most popular event in the Midwest because it is year long. You change it not all the time, not every week, but you are constantly changing music. And there's a talk, Mark, for a second. There's this huge fountain like thing, like
all of a sudden the stage opens up,
yeah,
and you have a water show. It's like, what's next? What's coming next? It was phenomenal.
Dana Montana, you're one of a kind. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all
Merry
that stuff.
Christmas to all of the people that we've known all these years. Your beautiful daughter, who hasn't made it out here this year, Rick.
I know. She's got like volleyball. She wants to come. She's like, how's Dana? Because Dana, Fiona was born, and Dana, there's a horse up there named Princess Fiona in the show.
Yeah,
and it's a very sweet thing, and we go way back. Dana, I'll mention the shows this Sunday on my 1 hour radio show, but I'm so happy you could come on. You're the hardest working person I know, and I'm so glad you and Mark Nasser got together. There's no telling where that might go, and I appreciate Mark giving his critical opinion. He's raving about it. He's raving, and Ken Price, who hasn't even seen it, is raving about the show. So good job, Dana. Good job. If we didn't have the president coming on, I'd keep you on for another hour, honey.
Oh, thanks, guys. Hey, all of you, Merry Christmas. And a prosperous New Year to everybody.
And the most important thing of all, health and peace for America and the world.
Very nice, Ken. And for that little bastion of entertainment called Lake Geneva, too. We'll be right back after a couple minutes, and Obama is going to talk. Welcome back. This is not Barack Obama. This is Rick Hogan filling in for Bill and Wendy. We're awaiting a talk that he's going to give about ISIS. I'm still with Ken Price of the Palmer House and Mark Nasser of Tony and Tina's wedding fame and Johnny Boy's graduation fame. And Dana Montana, we just let go. She was up in Lake Geneva. You having fun, Mark Nasser?
I when I'm in Chicago, I'm having fun, period.
Yeah, you really are made for this town. Don't you think, Ken? You and Mark have not met before today. But,
now we're bosom buddies. The thing about New York, I love, but Chicago is a friendlier, I shouldn't say that, more manageable New York.
Now he's going to start that now.
We have this Midwest hick sensibility that I don't mean to be unkind because I have many, many family and friends in New York. That in order to get to New York, you got to have a little bit of an attitude. That really, I would imagine, for a creative person, ain't the best thing in the world because you've got to constantly be sensitive and responding. But Chicago, we're here, we're kind, and we're pretty stylish too, I have to say.
Well, you guys are very stylish. I'm going to have you guys talk to each other for a while. I'm going to give you the show while I go see if Maureen Shulman is here. Well, we'll get her on while we await Barack Obama.
Is she bringing cheesecake?
I've never seen her anywhere without cheesecake. They do have – you know about the new book, right?
I do not.
Oh, it's called The Eli's Cheesecake Cookbook, and it is – Ken Price, this is the theme of the show. It is a number of recipes for cheesecake, which has made them famous and it's worldwide attention.
And, of course, your father and Mark's father had to be good friends.
Yes. But it's also the book. I couldn't cook a cup of tea, but the book is so interesting for the history of Eli's that it talks about.
How
it's
wonderful.
Fascinating. I will be right back. Listen to Mark Nasser and Ken Price have their own show for 3 minutes.
So, Mark, what's the likelihood of you bringing your incredible talents and creativity to Chicago?
Well, I'm always looking for opportunities here, and I, because they do interactive shows, they're actually also environmental shows. I need a great space, so What do you got at the Palmer House?
Everything is always open to negotiations. It sounds wonderful. You know, City of Chicago has, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, 90 experimental theaters. There's a lot of stuff here. What's really exciting about Chicago, and as a New Yorker, you know this, some of the best shows that are now on Broadway really started in Chicago. In the old days, everything used to be in New Haven.
Right.
Now, I mean, going all the way back from you know, Mel Brooks brought the producers here. I mean, Sondheim brought one of his shows here.
Yeah, well, I will say that, you know, there's more theater in New York, but I think per show, there's no city that has better theater than Chicago.
And it's coming out of Chicago, and that says a lot. So there's room for, I think, somebody with your creativity, and I would certainly, you know, bang the drum to make certain that everybody knows about it.
This is the best. I've set up some great duos on the radio before, but I don't think any better than the two of you. I'm not kidding. Maureen Schulman's not here yet because she doesn't. But I'll tell you, but the book is fascinating, Ken, and it's high time they did this. They took this idea. Do you know this story, Martin Esser?
I think he first needs to know who.
Go ahead.
No, you tell him. Who.
Well, Eli Shulman was a kid who grew up on the poor West Side. His father died when I think he was a teenager. He had to fend for himself. And he called himself ever a salami surgeon. He had a number of restaurants before opening a relatively famous place called the Ogden Huddle, where he served. He was so generous, too. All servicemen got free meals after the war.
Wow.
All servicemen. Then he opened a place called Eli's Stage Delicatessen, which was on
Oak Street.
Thank you, Ken Price. Ken Price will be at Zany's.
And what was next door?
Yeah, we'll be at the Esquire Theater. We'll be at Zany's Friday and Saturday.
I have a cover charge.
And then he opened his first white tablecloth place, which was called Eli's The Place for Steak, which is where the Lurie Children's Hospital is now. And for those of you downtown for any reason shopping on Michigan Avenue, there's a beautiful park a block east of Michigan Avenue on Chicago Avenue that is the Eli Shulman Park. Oh, and there's a plaque. I mean,
directly south of the John Hancock Center and the water tower.
Next to the firehouse, mm-hmm. One of the oldest firehouses in town. And he was, when I wrote his obituary some 20 years ago or so, I called around some people. I called former Governor Jim Thompson, who literally said, and I had to ask him after he gave me this quote, I said, is this for print? You really mean this? He said, I would not have ever become involved in politics if it was not for Eli Shulman, who took Jim Thompson when he was a young state's attorney and introduced him to all of his politically connected friends.
Because those guys knew everybody.
Yeah.
Because they came into their restaurant.
Well, and because they were at the restaurant all the time. That's an old-fashioned thing. People like Arnie Morton. Sure. And I remember we're sitting in the Showcase studio out here on Michigan Avenue, and the first Taste of Chicago was held on Michigan Avenue.
Absolutely. And it was just a taste.
Oh, yes.
It was no more than $1.75, I think.
No kidding.
I mean,
And the thing is, Ken, everybody ran out of food. Arnie Morton was the guy whose idea it was, and everybody ran out of food. So everybody said, hey, this seems like a pretty good idea. Maybe we should make this even bigger. And then he invented, because he was not happy with cheesecake. I mean, it's such a simple story, not happy with the cheesecakes he would be served in other restaurants, that he decided to make his own cheesecake. And Eli was no, you know, great Grant Achatz kind of chef. And he did it.
Yeah.
He did it. And now, you know, the Clintons eat cheese.
But you see, this is exactly what I'm... Do you realize how much history you have just talked about?
Are we going to go to President Obama? A commercial. We need to get a commercial. Welcome back to me, Rick Cogan, filling in for Bill and Wendy, and we've been awaiting the President of the United States, who has a few things to say about ISIS, which, of course, is very important. But my guest, Maureen Schulman, she and Mark Schulman run Eli's Cheesecake. They have a new book out called The Eli's Cheesecake Cookbook. But more to the point, one of their daughters, one of their beautiful three daughters, Well, they have three beautiful daughters, too. Maureen was on the radio last night, and I thought, well, the people who stay up and listen from 10 to 11 on a Sunday night are not always up at 11 Monday morning listening to the radio. The book is, as I told you last night, Maureen, is just amazing. It has a number of interviews, not just of recipes, not just for cheesecakes, but for other grand meals, like Kathy Murray's favorite liver, Eli. But it also is such a great story. I'm so proud of you for thinking of the book in that kind of way, to have it explain who Eli was and what that era was. A great Frank Sinatra story. Can you tell that one again?
Oh, well, Frank Sinatra was a regular at Eli's when he was in town performing. And do you want to tell a story about the missing the drink? So everyone was just in awe when he came in, customers and our staff alike. So they just would literally stare at Frank Sinatra. He usually had an entourage, a table of like 12, right in the center of the room. So when the waiters were, a full staff was behind him, but no one was doing anything because they were basically in shock. So he finally stood up and said, "Can anyone get a drink around here?" And every person in the restaurant customer stood up with him.
That's a great story. That is such a great story. There are pictures of Frank Sinatra in the book because he was a dear, dear friend of Eli's. When you were putting together the book, you reminded me, Maureen Shulman, and again, I think the best place to get the book is go to EliCheesecake.com because you can get the book and a cheesecake, and there's nothing better than that, and an autographed copy of the book. I know the book was difficult kind of to put together because there were so many different elements of it, but the response must be fantastic.
Well, we've gotten great reviews. We're really happy, cooking-wise, for a great review from Bon Appetit.
Oh.
And I think that also that reviewer, Julia Kramer, really looked at it as the whole picture, like you're saying. As a Chicagoan, I love this book for its endearing stories, incredible archival photos, and the memories it evokes from my Eli's cheesecake childhood. I love the recipes, but I love the nostalgia.
See, I think that's what distinguishes this book. There are a lot, as you people know, and you know too, Maureen, a lot of cookbooks out there. I mean, it's a very, very, very competitive market. But this is such a step above. And you also have in there, you just cook them for Hanukkah. You cooked some of the original meals that were on the menu at Eli's, didn't you?
I did. Our daughters were home, and we had a big cook-off in our kitchen. And I made, well, okay, first of all, I was going to make matzo ball soup, but I didn't because every Friday at our bakery, Eli's Cheesecake World Cafe, we do one recipe from the cookbook, from the Eli's Place for Steak. So Antonio was already making matzo ball soup, so why should I do that? So Mark brought that home. But we made Chateaubriand, and we made the wedge with the house dressing. The house dressing was so good. I forgot how great
you
real dressing
it.
Is.
Well,
yes,
because
I
you
made
it.
It.
Yeah. Well, and when you met Mark, and when the restaurant was still going on, even after Eli's death, helping run by Eli's wife Esther, you would order from Eli's all the time, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Because you're a mom of three kids and also working as a publicist in town.
Right. So I would say 4 out of 7 nights we ordered from Eli's.
What a great, it sounds like a dream come true.
It was
for
a dream
me.
Come true. Yes, it was culture shock 10 years ago when the building was torn down for Children's Memorial Hospital.
How did Eli, Maureen Shulman, how did Eli come to invent what is now literally an international sensation? I wasn't joking earlier when I said that the Obamas eat Eli. I mean, the Clintons, everybody eats this cheesecake. How did he come about inventing it?
Well, he decided that he wanted to have a signature dessert for the restaurant. He didn't like what was available. He really hated serving fresh fruit because you never know how it's going to taste, even if it looks good. So between lunch and dinner, he just went in the kitchen and baked cakes. And then, you know, he had a lot of regulars at Eli's. So every night he would come out and say, "Hey, here's my latest batch." And people would taste it. And they'd say, "Oh, it's good. You forgot to put the sugar in." Like, they give all his comments. And he just kept going with it. And then in like late 1979, he finalized his his first four flavors, which were original plain, chocolate chip, cinnamon raisin, and Hawaiian.
Wow.
And
it was a big hit at the first Chicago, Taste of Chicago.
Well, that's when he decided he would like test bigger waters. So he and this is a
like
riot.
People because, weren't his friends, right?
Right, yeah. People that weren't his friends. So what was funny was like no one knew what to expect. Yeah, I told my 80-year-old grandmother who lived at 777 to meet me by the Eli's booth. Big mistake. We've never seen her since. No.
That's the last time I saw Grandma.
So he went out there in the Eli way with his like full suit on.
Of course, he always wore a suit.
I know. So it was just packed. The whole street was packed. Eli's was packed, and this was before we pre-cut cheesecakes. This was before we had, you know, machinery. So he was like just cutting as fast as he could.
Oh my God, I have some vague memory of that whole
with his
scene.
Tie on, yeah. Like flip behind his shoulder, yeah. Cutting.
Yeah.
So, and that's when, he knew everyone liked it, and some restaurateurs like Arnie Morton, Gene Sage, those kind of people said, hey, we want to carry it too.
Yeah, that's what really kicked it into conglomerate. You and Mark have done the most remarkable job of marketing this thing. I mean, the Clintons are huge fans of the cheesecake. The Obamas are huge fans of the cheesecake. The guy in fifth floor of City Hall, whose name I shall not mention, is a huge fan of the cheesecake. How have you done that?
I think that we just think of interesting, like if there's a special occasion, a celebration, someone's birthday, whatever it is, we think of fun ways to send them cheesecake. Huh. And it might be the city's 150th birthday. Well, we'll propose, let's do a giant cake, which we're sort of become known for now.
Yeah.
And I think that's propelled a lot of that.
One of the best things about the book, again, is called The Eli's Cheesecake Book, and the way to get it, you can get it at Amazon.com and probably in a few bookstores, though it has been selling out. I would go to EliCheesecake.com because it's a lovely website, and there are a number of different, how many kinds of cheesecake are there now?
I'd say probably, including seasonals, like 50.
Wow. And what are those little kind of ice cream things that you brought to the station last night?
Those little things that our daughter Alana Schulman invented when she was 9.
She did?
Yes.
What are they called?
They're called cuties.
They are really good.
Yeah, you know what? I think they're the perfect hostess gift. I'd take it everywhere. And they're 1x1-inch squares of original plain cheesecake dipped in chocolate with a little swirl of edible gold dust on the top.
Wow.
So very glam, but really fun to bring, and you don't trump your hostess who's maybe made a fancy dessert.
Uh-huh. There's a great story in the book. Again, the book is called The Eli's Cheesecake Cookbook, of the famous liver that Eli used to cook. He didn't cook it, but his chefs cooked it at the restaurant, where he would put it, when he first put it on the menu, people would go, even his friends would go, I don't want any liver, because people have bad memories of eating their grandmother's liver, and it's terrible. They'll have chopped liver. And so what he would do, he goes, okay, I'm sorry. He would come to the table with a so-called free appetizer and say, here, why don't you try some steak? This is sliced steak.
Right.
And the people would go, oh, man, is this good? He was serving liver. Now we got to take a break from Maureen and go to the newsroom.
No, not yet, Rick. You can keep talking. I just wanted to let you know, I think we're getting pretty close to President Obama making a speech on ISIS, so I will let you know as soon as he approaches the podium.
Kim, you're the greatest. We have a great friend of the Obamas here. They like the cheesecake, don't they?
Well, you know, I know that we've made the cake. We've made actually a cheesecake with huckleberries, which I think is the president's favorite fruit. So on some fundraisers where he's come here and we've served the dessert, we've made some special batches for him that has been, in fact, I think we did a goat cheesecake with fresh huckleberry sauce.
Wow. One of the things about the recipes, and you know me and you've known me for a long time, I'm not much of a chef. It seems, I'm not a chef at all. I'm no kind of a chef. It seems to me that these are really easy things to follow. That must have been in the back of your mind when you and your co-writers put this together, that it could be for a simple-minded cook like me.
Yet a sophisticated writer. Yes, we had you in mind. No, what we did was we divided it up into sections. This was actually a good idea from our editor, Perrin Davis. So we have batters, crusts, and finishing touches. So you can mix and match. So what I did, like, I'm not the greatest baker either. These recipes came from our pastry chefs. I would do a crust. I would do the almond crust. Super easy. Nuts and sugar in the Cuisinart. Buzz. It's done. And then the batter is pretty straightforward, and there's pictures to step it out along the way. So that's easy.
That's what I need, pictures.
Yeah.
I need pictures.
Yeah, and then you could pick any topping. So when I had a meeting at our publisher's office, I made a recipe from the book. So I did the almond crust, super easy, espresso cheesecake, just like making a regular batter. And for the topping, I just did a chocolate glaze, just melted chocolate and drizzled it on. Mm. And I think it tasted good. They went ahead with the book.
Yeah, it didn't stop them.
It didn't stop them, Doug.
From publishing the book. They said, this is pretty good. Let's print this twice. The bakery is a fascinating place to me, too. If you're in the neighborhood, it's on the northwest side at
6701 West Forest Preserve Drive. There's a little construction going on, so I would take Irving to Oak Park.
But it also is an incredibly cool place. I mean, you can buy the book there. You can buy all sorts of cheesecakes there. You can also eat there, right?
Right. In fact, some of our cooks from Eli's The Place for Steak are there now. And we make a special soup, special entrees, and sandwiches, salads made every day. So we're basically open for breakfast, lunch, tea time, sweets. We have a coffee bar. So it's really, really nice.
Yeah, that's like a secret oasis in the city, I find.
And the other big secret about that is there's a bakery case. So it's sort of like your neighborhood bakery, which we just make in our test kitchen, all these things that really aren't available to the masses.
So do you think of yourself, Maureen Showman, now as an author?
I don't know, Rick. Should I?
Yes, I think you should. I think you should. We're going to take a break. I'm talking to Maureen Showman. The book, again, is the Eli's Cheesecake Cookbook. Seriously, go to elicheesecake.com. You can get a book and a cheesecake. I cannot think of a cooler Christmas present. Maureen?
Yes.
Is this book not the best Christmas gift you could ever imagine?
I think it's so great because you can have fun baking with your family. You can look at all the great historical pictures, celebrity shots, and learn a little bit about Chicago dating back to 1940. And we did some celebrity collaborations. You will find a Stroop waffle cheesecake by Jeff and Spencer Tweedy from Wilco.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
How did they become friends of yours and fans of the cheese? Are they just fans of the cheesecake?
Well,
this is like a Wilco cheesecake?
It's a Tweedy cheesecake. I met them because the year before last, Taste of Chicago, they were going to come and cut the cake.
Yeah.
And then it was the rain out, right?
Right.
But we sort of became friends that way. And then and I knew they liked the cheesecake, so I asked them if they'd do a celebrity collaboration.
And were they happy to do that?
They were very happy to do that. And I took the picture in the book, and that was super exciting to go to their studio. And Susan Tweedy, Jeff's wife, Spencer's mother, her favorite cookie is a Stroop waffle. So that was the inspiration behind their cake.
Scott Simon of NPR.
Well, Scott Simon has been a huge Eli's Place for Steak fan and Eli's Cheesecake. We love his whole family. So we asked him to do a collaboration. He turned it over to his daughters, Elise and Paulina, and they consulted their schoolmates. They're like 10 and 12 years old. They took polls. So they came up with white chocolate raspberry Nutella.
I'm surprised it didn't have like hot dogs and potato chips.
I know, the kitchen sink. So it actually tastes really good, and that recipe is in there too. And in fact, we're sending 20 cookbooks for their teachers and 2 cakes to Washington today.
Oh, how
so they
nice.
Can start having now, parties
did
at school.
Bill Curtis and his lovely Donna LaPietra, did they do a recipe?
They did. And it's called the Prairie Cheesecake because it's a call out to
Bill's upbringing.
Right, right, right. So and that has a really pretty candied orange top, and it's a ricotta cheesecake with sort of like an oat farm kind of crust. So, and I went there to their studio.
Have you heard from any people where they go, I hate those celebrity cheesecakes? Or do people like them?
You know, no, I don't think anyone said they hate them. And then Chris Kennedy did one. In fact, we're going to be at the book stall January 30th, and Chris and Sheila are going to interview.
Oh, how nice. That's a great bookstore, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Maureen, I'm glad we slipped you in. You and the president. You and the president. Your kids will be very happy about that. happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and all that jazz.
Thank you, Rick. Okay.